The good news is $40,000 of taxes can be deducted by itemizing, which for some of you out there, just those taxes already puts you past that $31,000 standard deduction we were just mentioning. So very possible that that's a big win for someone listening here. Now, the caveat to that, the small print, you might want to focus on this, is that that applies to families with an income, basically think $500,000 or less. Once you get over $500,000, it starts to phase out to the point where if you hit $600,000 of income, you're all the way back down from $40,000 of the state and local tax deduction to $10,000 again.
Welcome to Finance for Physicians, the show where we help physicians like you use money as a tool to live a great life. I'm your host, Daniel Wren, and I've spent the last decade advising physicians on their personal finances with the mission to help them understand that taking control of their finances now means creating a future where they can practice medicine where, when, and how long they want to. Hello, everybody. We have two special guests today, so I'm doubly excited to talk today, and we get to talk about the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, right? OBBBA.
Say that five times fast.
Did I get that correct? Yes.
It's ABBA, but without the dancing queen.
Jeff's been planning that one.
He was ready.
I was practicing saying that, and I think I nailed it, but I did not have high confidence on being able to nail the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. But it is now a law, so we felt like it was important to give kind of a breakdown of what's changed, how it affects you guys listening. And there are a lot of changes, some of them good, some of them not so good. So we're gonna focus in on the non-student loan aspects, because I think the student loan aspect in particular had a lot of big changes that will affect a lot of you guys listening. So we felt like it'd be better to kind of cover that in a separate conversation and just kind of zero in on that. So today we'll be focusing in on the non-student loan aspects of the OBBBA Act, whatever you want to call it, bill. So we're going to try to cover those most relevant points that we've kind of identified. There's a bunch of changes. There's like, I was making an attempt to read through the bill, kind of in tangent with ChatGPT. I don't know if either of you guys have tried this yet, but it's a monster. Now with ChatGPT, it is a little bit more manageable, but it's a monster of a bill. It's like, you know, hundreds and hundreds of pages.
Mm-hmm. So, that's where the big comes from. Yes.
And it's beautiful.
It is definitely big. I would say it's not beautiful from a textual standpoint. It's very poorly worded, but it's, I mean, in legalese language. So anyway, we're going to go through the changes. Some of the things have been solidified. And so I think to start, we'll kind of talk about the stuff that has been, well, this is really not a change, the stuff that's been solidified. So Jeff, I'll kick it over to you first to talk about what's happened with tax brackets and then the deductions, standard deduction stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So with the tax brackets, so the talking point we've had along the way for the last several years is the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, the tax brackets are going to revert back. They're going to expire to the old higher ones. The news from the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, ABBA, is that those tax brackets have been made permanent, which means that they don't have an expiration date. So in other words, the tax rates that we've been used to for the last 10 years, roughly, will stay in place until positive action or intentional action is taken to change them. So permanent doesn't mean you can count on them for the next 100 years, but it would actually take action to change them at this point. So they have been changed a bit. Some of the lower tax rates were expanded just a hair. I think it'll amount to like $100 in difference in taxes. Don't quote me on that. It's not a major change there overall, but basically they've been made permanent and they'll keep indexing with inflation. So that gives us those tax brackets that you might have heard of are at the 10% rate, 12% rate, 22%, 24%, 32%, 35%, and the top tax bracket being 37%.
Basically the same as it was last, well, this would be effective in 2026, but basically it's a continuation of what we've all gotten used to the past few years. And I think the big takeaway, because like Jeff was saying, it was set to expire at the end of this year. And so for most of you guys listening, that would have been a negative impact on your taxes. Like your tax bill would have been, for most people listening, higher had those expired. So that part, I would say, is a positive change for the most part. Mm-hmm. Jeff, anything else to add on the tax bracket changes?
Oh, yeah. A few other things that have to do with just the regular old, the way you file taxes. The standard deduction has been increased a little bit and it's been made permanent as well. So the standard deduction is the amount that you get to take off of your income, no matter if you're counting your expenses and your taxes and everything else or not. And for a single person, it's just under $16,000, and then that'll be indexed with inflation. It was $15,000 for a single person, so a little bit of an increase there in how much income is basically tax-free to you. For the head of household, it's $23,625 now, and for married filing joint, it'll be $31,500 again. So the reason that's important is you can always take that off of your income tax after, you know, it reduces your income and you don't pay tax on that amount of income. But the other reason to keep that in mind is that is a threshold where itemizing, you have to have more itemized expenses to actually itemize, or else it just doesn't make sense to you in most cases. So in that $30,000 range is where a lot of our married families are going to be looking, or $25,000 or so for head of household, or that $15,000-$16,000 range for a single filer.
Yeah. And so that was a continuation as well as what it was in the past, but also an improvement for what it was back. What it would have reverted to would have been a lower number for standard deduction. So I guess you could say generally is a good thing. I think we'll circle back to some of the components of the standard deduction, or I guess itemized deductions, because that that's changed also, is like how you calculate the potential itemized deductions. Because that's how, you know, that's an important thing, because, you know, the question is, do you take the standard deduction, which everybody gets, or do you take this itemized deduction because you've done the calculation and it's higher than the standard deduction? The way that all works has changed some, which we'll circle back to in a minute. But other things, Jeff, in regards to tax brackets?
The only other kind of change that was there, this would be for if we have some senior listeners here, would be that there is an additional standard deduction or credit exemption that's available, and it has an income phase out of, that's about $150,000. So it's not for everyone, but you could actually have a little bit more tax-free income if you're 65 plus.
Yeah, that's the part that was intended to be like the Social Security tax-free kind of.
Oh yeah, good point. Yeah, that's being kind of touted as Social Security is tax-free. It's the tax status of Social Security is still the same. It's just effectively you will not pay tax on more income with that credit, with that exemption. So, you know, you may not pay tax on Social Security where you once were, but it doesn't make it tax-free just as a blanket statement.
Right. Yeah, I think they ran into some roadblocks with that when they were actually in the creation of it, where they were going to have to get more votes and complicated. And so they're like, here's a workaround. That's the messy part of politics, I think. But this is the unofficial or indirect version of their way of doing that, I guess.
Yes. For many people, means less tax, but it doesn't mean tax-free. No.
Yeah. I mean, that will definitely be good for people retired or, you know, 65 or older that's income's below the threshold. And from a strategic standpoint, there'll be a little bit of a extra efficiency with trying to keep your income below that threshold. Because when you're retired, unless you're just purely relying on like pension income, you typically have lots of control over how you take out of accounts, and it affects your income tax bracket. So that will, I haven't looked at the exact effective rates, the numbers of all of it, but that'll add some incentive to keep your income below that threshold to allow you to get that.
Right. Yeah. So you're talking about the tax brackets being permanently extended. There was a push to convert a lot of things to Roth now while the tax rates are low, because they're going to expire.
Right.
Now there's still an incentive to convert to Roth, because if you can control your income at an older age and continue to get this, it's a $12,000 credit or deduction. You know, that's a pretty decent credit in that, or a deduction in that range. So definitely some income planning is worthwhile there.
Yep. Consult your financial planners for help.
Yes.
Or Jeff or Heather. Cool. That cover it, Jeff, on the...
I think that gets us through those basics of the tax rates.
Every detail you need to... Just kidding. No, that is not every detail. Consult your accountants and read the bill yourself for every detail.
Yes, absolutely.
That would be painful. Okay, so a couple other big changes. Child tax credit. Well, estate tax exemption and child tax credit. Those were pretty big, not necessarily changes, but, well, little changes. So Heather, you want to break it down for us?
Sure. Well, let's start with the child tax credit. That's probably the one that will affect more of our listeners, at least at this point in time. So this was another one of those permanent changes, you know, until and unless new legislation is introduced to change things again, but a permanent increase to the child tax credit. So starting this year, 2025, it has gone up slightly to $2,200. Now, starting next year in 2026, it's going to be indexed to inflation. So that's a new thing that will be kind of nice to see that going up year over year. One thing to note, of course, this is still an income-based phase out on that child tax credit. So in case you were wondering, for those of you that are single filing or have household, it's $200,000 is where that income-based phase out starts. And then for those of you that are joint filers, it starts at $400,000. And then with the estate tax exemption, this was a pretty big deal for those who might be anticipating a significant inheritance or planning to leave quite a legacy to future family in the future. This was actually set to expire at the end of this year. So there was a lot of estate planning going on, a flurry of activity to try and avoid what was going to be a very large decrease, 50% decrease in the amount that could be exempted as of the end of this year. But instead, there's actually going to be an increase from where it's at right now, $13.99 million. It's increasing to $15 million per person for that exemption. And that will be starting next year in 2026. So again, instead of that decrease by 50% at the end of the year, instead, it's actually going to be going up from what it is right now. So a pretty big deal there.
Some people were concerned about that, especially if your net worth is or would be expected to exceed the number. Double the number is now, you know, 30 million versus 15 million, huge difference. So, and when you're thinking about that number, like if you're thinking about, well, is that me or not? The way you really should look at it is it's your net worth. So all your assets minus all your liabilities, plus your life insurance, total death benefit. Cause you know, if something were to happen, that's what your estate is. It's all your assets at death. And then even you might throw in like inheritances potentially expected over the short term or, you know, foreseeable future. So that kind of pulled together is like potential estate. And so, you know, 15 versus 30 million for, this is for couples. I'm just kind of throwing out.
Right. Right. 15 per person, 30, if you're doubling that for including the spouses for the married couples. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners are like, I don't have that right now, but you know, we are all trying to accrue those assets over time. And so this is something that hopefully will be relevant to our listeners as they are increasing their assets and looking ahead to their future estate planning.
Or your parents or grandparents, that might have helped them. They're probably more likely if you're younger and you're listening, your parents or grandparents, if they have sizable estates, they're going to be benefiting even more so, but which also potentially would benefit you.
Correct.
So it's all good. The child tax credit thing is a little change, a little improvement. So that's good. I wouldn't say it's a game changer, but.
No, but always nice to have something indexed to inflation.
Yes.
I don't know. I have 4 kids now, maybe 5.
Probably need to talk with Mindy first.
Right. Consult your partner if you want to increase your family size. Got it.
Well, last I checked, not great to have children purely for financial reasons. So
the credit doesn't cover it all.
Last I checked. Now, I guess in some cases, people are in a tough position to where they're restricted from being able to have children. That's a different story. And so this can help them. But I don't know that I wish there was a little bit more emphasis in that category. I'm starting to get into opinions, so I'll keep it short. But I think there was a lot of talk about incentivizing families, children, producing children, increasing the number of children. And this doesn't change that much, in my opinion. I wanted to take a quick break to share some exciting news. Our new course, Vitals Check, Your Money Game Plan for Post-Residency Life, is now live. If you're finishing training or just getting started as an attending, this course is for you. It's taught by me and my team, the same financial planners you've been hearing from on the podcast. We'll be walking through big money decisions you're facing right now. Things like what to do with your student loans, or how to make smart housing decisions, and where to start investing. You'll also gain access to proven tools and templates that will help you set goals, track your money, and build a plan that fits your life. And just for listening to this podcast, you can get 50% off if you sign up by August 31st. Just make sure to use the code podcast at checkout. You can register now at financeforphysicians.co, and we'll make sure to include the course link in the show notes. Okay, so this gets into the itemized deduction thing versus standard deduction I was implying a little bit earlier. So there's been a few changes to the way that you do your tax return and calculate what you actually get taxed on. So we were talking about deductions a minute ago. So Jeff's going to kind of get into what some of those look like in terms of actually applying deductions.
Oh, yeah. See, this is where taxes get exciting.
And confusing.
Yeah. So this is overall very interesting. The itemized deduction changes and possibly very helpful for some of our listeners and possibly very disappointing for others. So let me get into it just to summarize. Prior to the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, ABBA, passing, anyone that's filing taxes would be limited to $10,000 of state and local taxes. That's where SALT, state and local taxes. Only $10,000.
Which would be composed of?
Only $10,000 could be deducted. That would be made up of, Daniel, what do you think goes into that?
You tell me.
Oh,
state and local income tax. There's one more. All right,
pop quiz. State and local income tax, or you could do sales tax if sales tax was more of a benefit for you. And in some states, it has no income tax. That might make sense now to track a little bit more of that. Also, real estate taxes, property taxes.
Property taxes. That's the big one. Most physicians, what do we see? Most physicians, when you add those all together?
Oh, so yeah. For most of the physician families we work with, that far exceeds $10,000 a year.
Especially when...
Just the real estate sometimes.
Yeah. But especially depending on your location, right?
Yeah.
Certainly depending on your location. Yeah. If you're in a highly populated area with really pricey homes, I wouldn't know. I'm in Ohio, so that's exciting for me. But some areas of Ohio have some pricey homes. But some of those really high cost of living areas that also tend to have high income tax rates at the state level. In particular, so I'm thinking, New York, California are big ones, right? but there's plenty of states with an income tax where this would matter. And so the news there, so I didn't get to the good part. So historically, that's limited to $10,000 of deductions for those taxes. That is temporarily being increased to $40,000 with an asterisk, with a caveat. But the good news is $40,000 of taxes can be deducted by itemizing, which for some of you out there, just those taxes already puts you past that $31,000 standard deduction we were just mentioning.
Mm-hmm.
So very possible that that's a big win for someone listening here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the caveat to that, the small print, you might want to focus on this, is that applies to families with an income, basically think $500,000 or less. Once you get over $500,000, it starts to phase out to the point where if you hit $600,000 of income, you're all the way back down from $40,000 of the state and local tax deduction to $10,000 again. So, you know, if you're on the very high end of earning, this makes no difference to you because you're going to get capped out. Only $10,000 of taxes are deductible again. But in that range, you know, and a lot of families might be in that range of right around that $500,000 range for income. It's going to make a lot of things more important for planning income, like your pre-tax deductions and trying to stay in that phase out range if you have those taxes to itemize. Daniel, you look like you've got a lot of questions, a lot of things.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was just point of clarification, maybe like what do they define as income in that particular phase out?
It's the MAGI. Modified Adjusted Gross Income. And I cannot remember what goes into that modification off the top of my head.
That's like top of the line deductions, like charitable contributions. And there's different types of income. That's what I'm asking about. Like when you do your tax return, it starts with what you make. It starts with the total wages, and then you deduct things and you get to lower numbers. Ultimately, you end up with your taxable income. That's the bottom, lowest number typically. So this sounds like based on the modified adjusted gross income, which is kind of higher up on the tax return with a slight small print. There's all this small print when we start talking about taxes, like variations and whatnot. But the gist is, it sounds like high income, higher than average physician income, is going to get phased out of this and end up in the same position we were before with the 10,000 limit.
Right. So, but I think if you have particularly a lot of single physician households or even some dual physician households, that range, that 500,000 is a phase out to watch. And if you can get some extra bang for your buck by doing things that reduce the income at the top, don't just earn less income to earn less income. So you're not being taxed at more than a dollar for a dollar of income that you make. But if you have some room to fund your 401k or 403b or your health savings account, things like that, those are the choices you can make that'll help out with, man, you can now also get a better deduction for the taxes you're paying other places.
Yeah, and that'll make a ton more. I would say the average physician family we work with is probably going to see benefit from this to some extent, because the average income is maybe a little below that or around that. And so it's a pretty substantial benefit. Like, say your SALT taxes you were paying was like, say you have $1 million house and you got pretty good income. It's definitely way above $10,000 that you were not able to deduct. So every dollar above that now is deductible, which increases the chances you're, and it gets a little confusing because you got to decide how much it actually increases your number compared to the standard deduction, because that was the prior number. But there's going to be a fair amount of people that have, especially if you have mortgage interest, because that's the other component in the standard deduction, and charitable contributions. If you had, you know, modest charitable contributions, a decent amount of mortgage interest, and your income's in that 500 or less range, you probably are going to see some pretty good, especially if you're in a high tax state, high income tax state, you're probably going to see some pretty good improvement or benefits from this particular change, but it's temporary.
It's temporary. Expires in 2029. So pay all your taxes now, I suppose. And make sure you're under $500,000 of income to really pay your taxes now. But wait, there's more, Daniel.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
With itemized deductions. So this is where, I mean, like I said, I don't know if there's anything more exciting in taxes than really thinking about your itemized deductions.
So exciting.
You know, maybe actually there's more exciting stuff at the QBI, the qualified business income.
Goodness.
Oh, that really gets me going. But so there's also now a limit. So we talked about a limitation on the benefit of itemizing deductions for higher income earners. So we mentioned the SALT deduction, that state and local tax, you know, that $500,000 is kind of a magic number to be looking at. Now, for our listeners or anyone that's in the top tax bracket, the 37% tax bracket, and that one, so that starts at about $760,000 for a married couple, $635,000 for a head of household that has dependents, or the same for a single filer. So certainly higher income overall. But normally when you itemize or when you get that deduction, so if you are in, let's say we're in the 35% tax bracket, if I itemize a dollar, like, so if I gave $1 to charity and was deducting that, I get 35 cents back on my taxes because I'm in the 35% tax rate. Well, for the higher income, so in the 37% bracket, that is now slightly different, where there's a fraction attributed to it. Basically, you pay taxes at 37%, but you can only deduct them at 35. So you don't get quite as much benefit as a normal other tax brackets, as far as the marginal rate. You don't get the same going in as coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So overall, probably doesn't make a major difference to your decision on whether to itemize or not. You know, you still get your tax, you know, you still want to save on taxes if you're giving, if you're paying those state and local taxes, things like that. But kind of a little downer. You know, most of this news has been like how you can save more money. This is like, you'll probably have to pay a little more.
Yeah. On the flip side of that one, though, that would increase the marginal impact of being able to do things like pre-tax 401k or whatever. Because if you can pull that income down below that threshold and avoid, so there's a reverse effect of being able to pull the income down below the threshold and gain those back, that effectively has, it's just more incentive. A lot of the things that happen have, you know, two sides of the coin. So there's a fair amount of incentive in that, just as the incentive to try to get your income after your federal wages lower, which, you know, we've already hit on this a couple of times. The easiest or most obvious way to do that is maximizing retirement plans, 403B, 457, that kind of thing, HSAs on a pre-tax basis. It's just amplifying the impact of that. So there's always strategies that'll come out, and we're only starting to kind of extract all the strategies that are possible out of this. So,
yeah. Oh, I got one more, Daniel. It's kind of itemizing, but it's like below the line. So you don't even have to itemize for this one, but it also is not above the line. So it doesn't change your AGI. And if we're speaking IRSEs, just know that you can still get this deduction even if you don't itemize, is the idea.
I think I know what's coming.
But this is so cool. Or maybe it's not. But you can now deduct up to $10,000 of interest on an auto loan, on a vehicle loan.
Amazing,
right?
Okay, well, do the math. This, I said, let's not get too far into the numbers before we start recording, but we got to get into the numbers for this one, because I just am curious. What would you have to do to maximize that?
Well, certainly, if there's a deduction, we want to maximize it, right? So,
this is Jeff being sarcastic, by the way.
Yes.
If you're not picking up on it.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, we need some sort of a audible cue that I'm being sarcastic there. So it is kind of fun. So today's interest rates, let's say about 5% for an auto loan right now. So if we have an auto loan at 5%, you would need $200,000 of auto loan to maximize that deduction. So
what's the big deal with that?
I mean, Daniel, you need a new car, I think. So just
no, I go got big. A new car.
Well, not a maybe
new
next
car.
Time.
Not a new car. I next got a used time. Car. So used cars don't count for this, right? Or is that, I think it has to be a new car. That's another caveat. So we're not endorsing going out and buying a $200,000 car.
No, we are not.
However, the tax code is not endorsing. They're incentivizing slightly.
Incentivizing, yes.
So it's, I think I was referring to the, I was reading a White Coat Investor article on this breakdown of this bill, and he said it pretty well. He said, this makes buying brand new cars on credit slightly less stupid. So I would say I mostly agree with that. I don't know if I'd go that far.
Yeah. Looking at this, it appears that this does apply specifically for new vehicles. I think it was proposed to include pre-owned vehicles, but I think the final version of the bill excluded pre-owned vehicles. So just throwing that out there.
Yes, practically speaking, plenty of people do have loans on their vehicles. Mm-hmm. And so if you happen to have one on a new vehicle that was assembled in the United States, mm-hmm. and the loan was taken out or refinanced after December 31st, 2024, so that's after last year,
yeah,
you know, you may as well get the deduction if you have the interest, but that doesn't make it necessarily the right decision to have the loan.
Sure. Buyer beware. I do feel like a lot of car salesmen are going to be capitalizing on this. But to be clear, this is not us advocating to maximize this deduction.
Right.
Yep. Even with this change, cars will still continue to depreciate and debt will still, net of all this, cost you money. So none of that's changed.
Oh, I was skipping over this one, but we'll just pair it up with one other expiring tax credit now. So if you really want to maximize this, there's the clean energy and clean auto type credits, things like of that nature. So make sure you get your $200,000 vehicle by September 30th so that you can both get the $7,500 credit for buying an EV vehicle.
But
again, and you get your new loan on a new vehicle that was assembled in the United States so that you can maximize your interest deduction.
It's practically free.
Yes. But for those that were thinking about getting it and qualified for that credit, do know the expiration has been moved up September 30th. You got to have that vehicle if you're getting it. Otherwise, you get no credit for it on your taxes. Mm-hmm. Similar vein, solar credits, clean energy, so solar panels, things like that. Originally, that was scheduled to go on into the next decade here, where you could get about 30% back as a tax credit on those clean energy type upgrades to the home. That has been cut short, where you will have to have that done by the end of this year if you want to get that tax credit.
The rush is on.
So, and at the time we're recording this, it's the end of July. You know, if that was something you were thinking about, you know, maybe it's worth thinking about a little harder already, but you probably got to get on that to make it happen by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So, but just know those are things that are going away that were credits.
So charitable contributions, the rules on that changed a little bit as well. You're already able to deduct charitable contributions as part of the whole itemized deduction component of your taxes. So that's one way to look at charitable contributions, is they're collectively a part of the number we were referring to with itemized deductions. But now there's another way to do it. Heather, you want to go through what that looks like?
Sure. So just to clarify, there's, for those of you who itemize your deductions and you also give charitably, just some new thing to note is that there has now been a new 0.5% of adjusted gross income floor that's been added to calculate how much you can actually deduct as part of that below the line itemized deduction. So what that means is your charitable contribution deduction amount is actually reduced by a number that's equal to 0.5% of your adjusted gross income. So round math, $100,000 adjusted gross income, there's going to be $500, the first $500 of your charitable contribution can't be deducted. But beyond that, the number can be deducted up to the maximum amount and carried over potentially to the next year if you can't take the whole amount. That being said, a very interesting back to what I think has been in place before in the past, but hasn't been on the books for a while, is for those of you who just take the standard deduction because you don't meet the threshold for being able to itemize over what you'd be able to take for the standard deduction. Starting in 2026, so starting next year, you can deduct anyway, even if you are not itemizing, a certain amount of your charitable contributions. So for those of you who are single head of household, it's going to be a maximum of $1,000 in charitable deductions. For those of you that are joint filers, it's up to $2,000. And again, that's for those of you who take the standard deduction, don't have enough to itemize. There is still a possibility for you to be able to deduct your charitable contributions up to a certain amount. So
those kind of are intangible with each other, right? Like the first point you're bringing up, essentially, if you deduct below that floor, you just can't deduct it. Is that correct?
So for those who itemize, there's that, correct. There's that 0.5%. In other words, if you make $100,000 and your floor is 500, which is 0.5% of your AGI, that means if you only were to contribute $500 in a year, you wouldn't be able to deduct anything. But okay, if you contributed $1,000, you would be able to deduct $500. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
This one is a little bit confusing, but really what it means is there's just an extra calculation, extra number to factor
in. Is that like a cliff? Like, is it like when you exceed the 0.5, you can deduct it, and if you're below it, you can't?
Yes, essentially, if you're below that amount, like you just can't deduct it. If you are over that, then you can. And of course, that's subject to the limits of how much you can deduct in a year, right? And even if you're itemizing.
But so that one's interesting because it's something to watch out for too, is at least I think how I'm understanding it is if you say you make 100 is a good number. So it's $500 for every 100,000 of income. So let's say you're making 500, that's $2,500. So if you're itemizing because of all this salt tax stuff we've already gone through, and you give charitably $2,500, maybe you should give $2,501. Is that correct? Am I understanding that correctly? Because am I misunderstanding that?
No, my understanding is that you would not be, you'd be able to deduct a dollar out of that amount.
So it's just anything below that number, you cannot deduct no matter what happens.
That is my understanding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's a little bit, that makes a little bit more sense. I wouldn't be surprised one way or the other based on how they structure these things. But so anything below that floor, no matter what your situation is, if you're itemizing, you cannot deduct it below that level.
That's my understanding. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that's kind of a bummer, but
for those of you that are trying to be strategic with your charitable giving and you are giving in order to reach a certain level, it's just another calculation to factor in. Of course, those of you that are going to give to charity regardless, please don't let this deter you from doing what you're going to do anyway. Mm-hmm. But again, just another calculation to factor in.
Yeah, it might increase the appeal of batched giving, which we've talked about in the past a little bit, but like that would be where you bulk all your gifts for a longer period of time, say like 5 years or something, you bulk all of them in 1 year, potentially could change the strategy on that. But we'll circle back to that in the future because a lot of these things are new and big changes. So on the other hand, the second thing you were bringing up, that's a positive. So this is a negative on the top end, positive on the bottom end.
Definitely. Definitely. It's giving credit to those that are giving charitably anyway. And even though they're not able to itemize, maybe, you know, they don't own property yet. You know, their income just isn't high enough yet to have all of the different things purchased that might qualify for itemizing their deductions. It is still nice to be able to get some credit for the charitable contributions regardless.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's always good.
Yeah.
All right, guys, we've covered quite a bit today, and it's definitely a dense topic. And so I thought it'd be best to take a pause here and give you some time to digest everything we've talked through. And in the next episode, we'll pick up where we left off and continue to go through the other key components of the new tax bill. So make sure to check in for part two. We're going to get into a couple things like the way the new tax bill changes tip income and overtime income. Also, we're going to talk about Trump accounts and some big changes to the 529 plans. Also some HSA changes. So make sure to check back in, and we'll look forward to catching back up then.
No guests or clients appearing on the podcast received any form of compensation for their appearance and obtained no other benefit from us. It should not be assumed that every client has had the same experience.